10 years ago, there was no hotter athlete in America than Michael Vick. The quarterback was drafted by the Atlanta Falcons, and he quickly became one of the biggest celebrities in sports, also an icon of Southern and hip-hop culture. But Vick's success was soon overshadowed by an animal abuse scandal. Vick pleaded guilty in 2007 to felony dogfighting charges that took place on his property in Virginia, and he spent nearly 2 years in prisons. Fans in his adopted city were left to question a sports hero that they had idolized. A new 5-part documentary from the Bleacher Report chronicles the rise and the fall of this very polarizing athlete. Joe Yannarella is the executive producer of the film Vick. He's also editor-in-chief of Bleacher Report. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning, Celeste. Thanks for having me.
It's a 5-part documentary now, but as I understand it, this began as another one of the Bleacher Report sort of short films or videos. How did it become a larger documentary?
Well, as you described, it started as a narrower digital-friendly featurette in the 5 to 10 minute range. We were specifically focused on the narrative of Michael Vick and his passion for chess in prison, how he took up the game, how it taught him patience and maturity and strategy, and some of the tactical aspects of football that resonated with him. And throughout that, our producer, Johnny Sweet, built a relationship with Michael and some of his reps, and they invited him to go along with them to Frank Beamer's last game at Virginia Tech, who was the coach where Michael was a student there. And then they invited us to accompany them to the state capitol in Pennsylvania, where Mike was lobbying animal cruelty prevention law. And as it turned out, we built a relationship with him over 5 or 6 months, and we got such unprecedented access that we thought this made sense for our first foray into a full-length 50-minute documentary.
So you must have felt that there were things that had not been said. I mean, Michael Vick has been talked about a lot, not only from his just meteoric rise after he became the first quarterback ever to be drafted first overall, first African-American quarterback, I should say, but a lot is written about, you know, the dogfighting charges, his time in prison, even whether or not fans would accept him as he returned to the ball field. So what was left unsaid? What did you discover that you felt was a surprise?
I think what we wanted to offer was holistic perspective. You know, taking all of those different chapters, there was the dynamic athlete that just blew people away. There was this criminal, inhumane act that people couldn't get past and captivated a country. There was the return and the comeback of this athlete again in another chapter. We wanted to give a holistic look at it, and we wanted to revisit removed from that. You know, looking at that whole body of work, looking at the man today, has he changed? What's his perspective? You know, what's changed since this kind of whirlwind of events occurred around this very high-profile athlete?
So let's go back in time before we begin to talk about some of the more recent developments. Remind us of just what an incredible athlete Michael Vick was, because he was and still in many ways is. Can we go back to not just his college career, but then his drafting in 2001 and what he was like on the field?
Yes, he was one of the most dynamic physical presences that ever existed at the quarterback position. You know, his combination of size, speed, arm strength. I mean, there were mobile quarterbacks previous to him, but not mobile quarterbacks who were able to throw the ball 70, 80 yards downfield, run like a wide receiver, elude defensive linemen. It was just breathtaking in his athleticism, and he captured the country and the world of sports with that breathtaking athleticism. And at the same time, he maintained a certain authenticity and realness that attracted him to the hip-hop community, the Atlanta music community. He was very authentic in the same way that Allen Iverson was authentic when he burst on the basketball scene.
So let's hear a comment on this very thing from rapper Capone. He is talking about Vick's connection with hip-hop culture.
Michael Jordan was the greatest of all time, but he wasn't hip-hop. But Mike Vick was every young kid's dream, playing in the slums. He was that relatable. He made you feel like you could play football. Everything Mike did became a metaphor, whether it was I'm quick like Mike Vick, you know what I'm saying? Everything that Mike did became a substance for somebody, an artist to rap about.
And I want to play one more comment. This is from former NFL quarterback Donovan McNabb, and he's explaining why Vick became so beloved in Atlanta and became to symbolize Atlanta.
Atlanta was the bed of hip-hop, beautiful women. It was just the place you go to enjoy. And Mike was the face of Atlanta. And to be honest with you, still is probably the face of Atlanta.
Do you agree with Donovan McNabb there? Do you think he still is in some ways a symbol of Atlanta?
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the reasons we decided to do a full length, because there is still a segment of the population that reveres Michael, despite everything that went on and him going to prison, that people revere him both for his athleticism, for his connection to the community, for his perceived coolness. You know, this authenticity about him just connected. One of the other rappers said he was just like us, you know, and Lil Wayne said, you know, at that time, if you made a rap video and Mike did not do a cameo in it, your rap video wasn't very cool.
So then we have to move on to the dogfighting charges and the abuse scandal, and the discovery of dogfighting at his property in Virginia was accidental. Some people forget that they were looking for drug paraphernalia from someone else and discovered that happening at his home. But once it occurred, it became a huge topic of conversation. And this is something that comes up, obviously, significantly in your documentary. Let's hear Michael Wilbin of ESPN. And he's talking about how you have to take dogfighting, while it's awful, you have to take it into context with Michael Vick's upbringing in the South.
As a son of the South, I know that I've heard about dogfighting long before Michael Vick. And people could be naive about this if they want. What Michael Vick did was wrong, criminally wrong. But he operated in a culture in which that was not all that rare. I remember talking to friends from the South, the Deep South, the Mid-South, during this time, and I'd say, what do you know about dogfighting? I've been around dogfighting, seen this since I was a kid.
These clips are all from your five-part documentary, Joe. How did people, and even Michael Vick himself, how does he put that era of his life into context?
I think he says, he takes full ownership and says it was wrong. He says he should have known better. I mean, in no way are we trying to defend his actions, but we wanted to provide some perspective and, you know, talk about his upbringing and the apartment complex he lived in where pets weren't allowed, but it was common to have strays that were almost the pets for everyone in the complex, and it wasn't unusual to have dog fighting. And you can't separate the fact, the inhumane and criminal nature of what was done, but it was somewhat accepted in those communities. So, but, you know, perspective-based, Michael looks back and says, look, I made mistakes. I was wrong. I shouldn't have done the things I've done. And he's quite remorseful about it. You know, it's difficult to separate those actions from the seemingly mature, responsible, remorseful person he is today. But at least you have some framing and perspective of what led to that.
It sounds like you have at least become convinced that he truly is a changed man. Is that true?
I never like to say definitively that someone has changed. We spent 5 or 6 months with him, and he, from all appearances, was remorseful, mature, took ownership, blamed no one, talked about becoming an agent of change, talked about turning a negative into a positive, spoke very little about football or a football future, and spoke more about how he could turn a negative into a positive. So during that snapshot, he seemed authentic about it. But always hate to take a definitive stance that someone has changed during a short period of time.
Yeah, I can understand that. Let's play another clip from your documentary. I'm speaking with editor Joe Yannarella of Bleacher Report. We're talking about former Atlanta Falcon Michael Vick and the new documentary that captures his fall from grace. And from that documentary, here is ESPN reporter Kelly Naki discussing. She's talking about the psychology behind dogfighting, but what she's really talking about is why this conviction, these allegations, were so upsetting to so many people.
Dogs want to please their master. Now you're putting this dog in this position where it's going to be physically harmed, routinely, and psychologically scarred, all because it's trying to please you. You're taking advantage of that and abusing it. Like a kid, right? Like a child. I think that people equate what he did with child abuse.
And Joe, one of the things that Michael Vick has talked kind of openly about is that the dog fighting was just one aspect of what he called his I guess, a divorce from reality, that he lost a sense of himself and his upbringing, and all of the attention and celebrity and money kind of made him lose himself. What did you learn about that?
I think that's fairly accurate, Celeste. And Aaron Brooks, his cousin, who was also a former NFL quarterback with the Saints, talked about that in his early 20s, that he was speaking to Michael and saying to him, hey, Michael, you know, life's getting away from you. Things are getting too fast. You're getting in bad situations. You know, it was to the point where Michael was flying back from Atlanta to his home every weekend, even during the football season when he had an off day for this. So he got caught up in a spiral of negative activity that he just felt like he was swept up in and takes full ownership and blame for participating in.
So one of the things I really enjoyed about the documentary is it did remind me, the dogfighting became to so dominate the story of Michael Vick, and that's understandable. But we have in some ways forgotten what an incredible athlete Vick was. Certainly here in Atlanta, he led the Falcons to the playoffs twice. He was selected to 3 Pro Bowls. This is an incredible athlete. But let's fast forward to modern times. And he has now become an advocate for pet safety. He lobbied for a bill that would create misdemeanor penalties for even spectators who watch animal fighting, and then make it a felony for adults to bring kids to fight. And this is a little clip of him serving as an advocate for pet safety.
I appreciate the moment to talk about the very important bill, House Bill 1516, which allows police officers to rescue pets and left in hot cars. I know that I'm an unlikely advocate. I was part of the problem when I was at my lowest. I made a decision to make change, and I stand by that. Now that I can reach people that activists can't reach, I appreciate that.
So how has he then moved forward, do you think? I mean, we know what he was court ordered to do. We know about him serving his time. But how has he personally moved forward from this?
I think he's just become a much more mature, responsible adult. I think during his 20s, he was on a ride of excess, and he did not need to mature because of the circumstances that were around him. And he made incredibly bad choices. I think his prison time was quite sobering for him. He talked about the fact, like, the day he went into prison, having to face his daughter and tell her that he was going away and she wouldn't be able to see him, and realize that it was through no fault of anyone else's but his own. And he vowed that he would never put himself in a situation like that again. So I think there's a certain maturity and sense of purpose that surrounds him today that doesn't necessarily revolve strictly around sports.
Now, Michael Vick is a free agent at this point. What kind of athlete is he now? Has his athleticism or his performance on the field changed?
Absolutely. I mean, at his age and the style of play, he is not the same athlete. And even coming out of prison afterwards, he was challenged to get back to the level he was before. Ironically, he's been known as a backup quarterback candidate that teams want to bring in because he's so mature and he's a real locker room leader and presence that they want to have, which is ironic given all the circumstances that surrounded him. But most teams that are even considering him aren't considering him in an active playing role, but as a backup, knowing he can be a steadying, mature influence around other people in the locker room and step in as necessary. We've heard rumblings the possibility of he could return to Seattle, but he, as stated, it wasn't something he put a lot of emphasis on at this point, whether he was actively going to be playing.
So what are we to take from the story of Michael Vick when we look at other pro athletes, athletes that also might suddenly be confronted with the kind of celebrity and money they weren't prepared for? Is he the kind of cautionary tale that could be useful to other athletes?
Oh, absolutely, Celeste. And I think the bigger question is, does someone deserve a second chance? I think that's for the viewers of the doc to decide on their own. For many people, they cannot separate the very inhumane and criminal act that exists from the man who appears to exist today. For some people, they give the benefit of the doubt for this wonderful athlete they've known and revered. I think everyone has to watch and make their own decisions whether someone who's paid their debt to society, served all the time that was charged with, do they deserve a second chance at redemption to move on with their life?
So it, we have about a minute left, but I got to ask you, Joe, is this the beginning of Bleacher Report kind of going the way of ESPN? Are we going to see more long-form documentaries from you?
I think the big question, Celeste, is opportunity-based. I mean, this was such a wonderful opportunity that resonated with our audience that is increasing, that is largely young. And so having a topic within the last 10 years of a dynamic personality and a narrative fit in the digital landscape of how our consumers consume content. So I think we'll look at more opportunities in the future, but I don't think there's any decision saying, okay, now go out and make 6-8 more great documentaries, because then you start to water down the narrative.
That is Joe Iannarella. He's executive producer of the documentary Vic. He's also editor-in-chief of Bleacher Report. You can find all 5 parts of this documentary. They're streaming at bleacherreport.com. Joe, thanks so much.
Thanks, Les. Appreciate you having me.